Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast. It's a SailGP edition, and we're going to be talking about the event in Saint-Tropez, which took place this last weekend. I'm joined by Magnus Wheatley from Cowes. Magnus, you've been doing a bit of sailing of your own, I know, in the Flying 15. Are you going to tell us a little bit about that before we start?
I can do. I'm just having the time of my life. I've just found the boat that I really want to sail for the next few years, and it's just fantastic. But this weekend was overshadowed by the Star Worlds, and I sort of had one eye on Saint-Tropez, one eye on the Star Worlds on the Friday. And all credit to Paul Kayard, one of the seriously nicest guys in sailing, at 66 years old, winning the Star Worlds. It eclipses everything. In my book, he's just won World Sailor of the Year. Guaranteed, there's no one that comes close to that. That it gives all of us hope that with the right amount of training, right amount of money, right amount of just general chutzpah about things, you can go and win at the highest level. And that was the story for me of the weekend. But we're here to talk about Saint-Tropez.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've got him down on my list of world champion winners this year to try and get on an interview or maybe even a podcast. So we'll try and get that organized. Yes, talk about SailGP, we will. It was Saint-Tropez. It was Mistral season. They lost their training day on Friday. They raced on Saturday in not so breezy conditions, but on the small rigs. And then it was blown off on Sunday. The Brits emerged victorious, having really jagged it. Just got that last point on the last leg of the day, last race of the day, to put themselves on top of the leaderboard. So they get the event points. And that, I thought, was not a brilliant performance by the Brits. But what I was impressed with was they turned potentially bad results into good results. And my personal view is that's about Hannah and Dylan's Olympic experience, where that's what you do in an Olympic regatta. You make sure you don't have any disasters. Did you see it that way?
I agree. And I called in my blog Hannah the MVP. She's really, really good. I mean, there's just no getting away from that. And the interplay between Hannah and Dylan, when we get the onboard audio, it's really interesting. She's very clipped. She's very concise. Dylan, equally, you know, I call him a bit of a mentalist. You know, you've got to get him in the right zone. And they were digging themselves out of impossible situations, and consistency wins, doesn't it? And there were four different race winners over four races. They were the most consistent, and they, as you say, aced it on that last upwind.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Read that right shift, which the Kiwis had executed beautifully in race two. When some would say they're lucky, Olivia Mackay said that they'd actually clocked that before. So it was very intelligent sailing by the Brits. Well deserved. That's really put them in the season standings. There's another $2.4 million to win over the next four regattas. And then there's the $2 million prize at the end of the in Abu Dhabi. I think they're looking really good for that. Well, they're certainly going to be in the top three. Let's see what they do when it gets to the final.
It was a kind of 15, 16 knot day. They were using the small rigs and they were using the new high speed rudders. I wondered whether those rudders were really in range in those conditions. I don't know. So But I thought some of the boat handling looked a little rougher across the whole fleet. And I wondered whether perhaps they're trying to get to grips with those new rudders. I don't know how different they are. Do you know much about them?
Yeah, so they're thinner with longer cords and, you know, quite significantly. The combination, as we've seen almost at every regatta, when they change the combo of rig and foils, and they went with the T-foils and they changed rig, people are really struggling with this. I have to say, I thought the fleet looked bang average most of the time. There were some shocking boat handling. I noticed one of the, on one particular leg, the Germans and the Danes, both hobby horsing. You think, God, this is coming towards the end of the season. I kind of expected people to be performing better. I look at someone like the German team, who are there. I can see their logical progress through. Others are just seem to be mired mid-fleet or going backwards. And the really supersonic teams are up there and they're pushing it. They're really, they're taking SailGP to another level. Their mark roundings are better. Their positional play is better. They're reading the wind as well as you can. I thought it was a pretty cruel regatta for most of them. You couldn't catch a break if you're out the back, you couldn't catch a break. And there were some extraordinary results. I mean, the Italians winning race three was extraordinary. They were dead and buried in third or fourth place, tacked early, clicked into their own private wind shift and made it round the mark and sailed on from there. Great to see them win. But having led at Mark One, their positional play down the first run, they always go wide and then jibe. And everyone's jibed inside them. And they think they're on a ley line to the mark. And they're not playing those wind shifts down that first run. And Ruji went from a commanding position down to third or fourth or something. And then got lucky, then sailed well, not taking anything away from him, sailed well. But I just look at the Italians. I've always been on their case. And I just look at the Italians' results, 12th, 6th, 1st, 11th. It's just kind of all over the shop. And I said, you know, this isn't doing Ruji much good. In he's got some big competition in America's Cup standings with Pete coming on board and now allowed to sail. It may be SailGP is the only place for him, and he could well go back to the Olympics because this isn't happening for him.
Wow. Okay. Well, I look at it a slightly different way. I'm very aware that sometimes when you're new to a fleet, winning a race kind of mentally gives you that permission to win more races. Once you've done it, you give yourself that permission. And I've seen it in other fleets. It kind of reminded me of what the Spanish did when they started to come to the fore. I remember them winning a race and thinking, wow, the Spanish won a race. That's amazing, because they haven't looked like they were going to. And after that, you know, more race wins came and, you know, they ended up winning the season, which was an even bigger shot. And they've won, you know, back-to-back events this year. So, you know, maybe they'll be able to push on from that. You know, Jimmy's running this team pretty hard, and you know he knows what he's doing. I think it'll be very interesting to see how they debrief that, what they spot in that race.
I mean, they've got no excuses. They've got all of the funding. They've got Carl Langford on the on trim. They've got an all-star team, a supposedly brilliant helmsman. You know, double gold medalist. You don't win that by not being fast. And it's just not clicking. So you may be right. There may be that a race win now, they can really go away and celebrate that hard and say, right, this is what we did. But I just didn't see around the race that they got lucky on a shift on the first beat. I didn't see the racecraft. Their mark roundings are really wide, really, really wide.
Yes.
And then there's this jibe angle that they insist on. Just take an earlier jibe. Jibe before the others who are trailing you go. And they seem to do it all the time. They've got a playbook and they won't step outside of that playbook. Whereas I think what you see with the New Zealanders, the Aussies, the Brits, is they are very willing to push it and step outside of their playbook. They may well have a game plan, but it's in the crucial moments. And you see how Tom Slingsby pushes it around the race course. Every inch matters, even though he had a bit of a shocker this weekend. Every inch matters, and you can see why these guys Slingsby is right on the limit. I mean, what was he, 20 centimetres over in the last race?
Yeah.
You know, that speed, that's pretty hard call, to be honest. But he's really pushing it. And that's what makes him a winner. And the rest, I've got to try and get to that aggression level of precision.
Now, you've mentioned that precision angle. We were talking before we started recording about the incident with the Kiwis and the Australians on a mark rounding, where there was a bit of a delay, but the penalty went against the Kiwis.
No, against the Aussies.
Sorry, that's right.
Again, the Aussies came inside. Yeah,
that's right. They came inside and they shouldn't have. That's right. You're right. I thought you thought they did have an overlap looking at it on the screen. I thought it was pretty marginal. I couldn't have called it. But what we've got to remember is, and this is what we were talking about, is Craig Mitchell in the booth does have the very precise data, and he has to call it based on what he sees. He can't give it a margin of error because that's what the system is there for. And the same thing on the start line, you know, 20 centimetres is still 20 centimetres.
VAR. I think where we may be getting slightly confused is the overlay graphic. The yellow boundary that the TV puts on it certainly won't be as accurate as what Craig's got in the booth. If I look at it from the yellow boundary, the circle round the buoy, it definitely looks like Tom's got an overlap, but that may not be two boat lengths. So
yeah,
I'm sure Craig is right on that, and he does make good calls. I think Craig is. I think I've got a lot of time for him. I know a lot of the sailors think he's quite harsh on things, but I think he's more fair than not. And over a season, I think it evens out in terms of luck in these calls and stuff. So, that was super... a really, really interesting mark rounding. That was two absolute professionals going round. I think the Black Foils, you know, Berlin gave enough room. They then went off and there's no quarter all the way to the boundary. Tom's going in a slightly higher mode and it's just brilliant. That's brilliant sailing.
Yeah, I think if, you know, if SailGP wants to align itself with Formula One and be compared with Formula One, that's the sort of racing that you're going to get. You know, what do they say? It's Rubbings racing, you know, like they were so close together going around, but under control. Pretty exciting stuff. Let's talk about the starts a little bit. There were a few really wacky starts with the Canadians and the Americans just got themselves in all sorts of a tizzy.
The French as well. I mean, that was brilliant. It was brilliant to watch. But
yeah, where did he think he was going with that? Like he went
carried on. I'd have definitely carried on because he bailed out of that too soon, and the boats to leeward. It looks like, we're talking seconds here, but it looks like he could have gone almost to the end of the line and spun it and then forced his way in on the middle of the line and borne away. But obviously that right shift came in, making it really difficult. And I think there was probably a few gusts on as well. But the shutouts at the starboard end of the line were really interesting. I haven't seen that before. Total shutouts, and that's your race over. But it does come back to the whole thing of, you know, I watched the Star Class Worlds, and they've got 100 plus boats on a very, very long line, and everybody's got the opportunity in the room to get through. Now, this is stadium racing. It's very different. But it does feel overcrowded. There's only really perhaps six places on that start line that you can possibly go to where you won't get gassed and you won't get forced out. So you're talking the middle of the line effectively. And so what that creates almost immediately from the get-go is a two-tier fleet. You've got six boats who are out, six boats who are in. The six boats behind have got to get lucky on some shifts. The six boats ahead have now got to execute. And that's a variable that Russell Coutts will probably say, well, that's great because the six boats ahead probably won't execute as well as the six boats behind. And, you know, you get a race out of it. But I do think that if you actually split the fleets and said, which I know that is what they're going to do when we go to 14 boats next year, if we do split the fleet six and if we did split the fleet six and six in Saint-Tropez, I think it would have produced fairer better, closer racing. And I was saying this before the champion, before this regatta in my blog, but it's Russell still pushing it with a lot of boats. And then you marry that with pretty shifty winds, where I think Tom Slingsby said it went from 20 knots to 8 knots in a heartbeat. And then you've got the small wing up and the new rudder profile and the new software update on the board drop system and the raking of the boards to try and stop the boats from nosediving. And I think all round, all of them looked sixes and sevens. They didn't get a practice race on Thursday because of the Mistral, and they went straight into racing. That's kind of, you know, would Formula One go out and having not had a practice or even a few...
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tighter laps, I'm not sure. And there was some real donkey derby stuff in before the racing started, and there were lots of pictures captured. I didn't see much video, but pictures captured of the Italians were nosediving, boats were all over the shop. And yeah, I just look at it and think that they need to settle on configurations, settle on things so that you can go to the settings, you can go to the wing trim and knows how much to pull on. The flight controllers with their fingers and thumbs can control that flight better. So we got what we got what Russell wanted, really, which was a bit of a donkey derby, and it was all over the shop. And as I say, it's not just me saying it. I read the New York Times with Andy Rice saying they just look bang average. And yeah, I didn't think it was a great advert for Sail GP this weekend.
No. As we say, though, you know, maybe the configuration was all a little bit not quite right. And you mentioned that the new software on the foils to try and prevent the big nosedive that happened when the Brazilians dropped the board at the wrong time or the wrong angle or whatever and broke the front beam. That sounds like a logical, sensible thing to do. I was quite impressed by the fact they got that up and running that quickly. Any feedback on how well it worked?
Yeah, an incredible effort from the Southampton tech team, who I was likening them to. They must look at the jobs list coming in, going, right, we've got the Brazilian boat in supermarket carrier bags, and we've got some rudders from the French, and we've got a shark bite out of the Brits, and a hole no hull on the American boat, and they got them all out. Well done, fantastic. It does, in my mind, raise a question as to whether these are the right boats for the league, whether the league needs new boats, and the amount of designers that have emailed me and said, if you were building new boats with the current foil configuration, you wouldn't go with this platform. You might consider going to a 40-foot platform rather than a 50. You might think of just dialing it down a little bit to get better racing. And I think also when the America's Cup kicks in, you might see a bit of a talent drain. And next season could well be a talent drain in SailGP, which means you put new people in. That creates more jeopardy. But I don't know, is it going to happen? Larry just made $100 billion in a day last week. I mean, he can write the check tomorrow to put new boats in. I'm not sure I agree with Russell's upgrade program of 1 year we're going to do hulls, 1 year we're going to do cross beams. It feels a little bit like Trigger's broom. For the international audience, that's somebody, you know, who's had a broom for 30 years and had five heads and five shafts. But it does feel... That something needs to happen, and the money involved in SailGP now is considerable. The profile is considerable, and they're gonna have to address the boat issue at some point.
Yeah, as you say, they're moving to 14 teams next season. They're gonna split the fleets. That's already been declared. I agree with you. I think it would be interesting to see how the format works with six and six. It would have to change quite dramatically because I guess you'd have to have more boats in the final, right? Is that the idea?
I guess you go into a repechage, don't you? The top two boats go through to a semi-final, and I don't know. The format will change. Maybe the top three boats go through, and then into the semis. So you've got six boats again on the start line. It'll be something like that, but it's 7 and 7, isn't it? So I don't know. That's to be announced. I don't think Russell's got a lot to lose. I mean, we've got Geneva coming up and then Cadiz. Geneva, they're going to put the new light weather foils on, which allow them to foil in 4 knots less breeze. So what is that? They're going to be foiling in
-4 knots.
Whatever it is, -4. Yeah. So that's probably going to be a light weather event, but it's not usually like that here as we get there and it's blowing.
It's not guaranteed. No, I've been there when it's been like Mistral conditions.
Yeah.
And then you go to the yacht clubs and see the photos on the wall of boats coming back with no mast. Yeah.
But then you've got Cadiz, and maybe what have you got to lose in Cadiz? I mean, the top three will be pretty much decided by then. I'm not sure the French are going to close. Is it an 11-point gap to the Brits? I don't think they're going to do it. If the next two results or next result goes the way it should do, with the Brits scraping through, so the top three will be decided. What's he got to lose by just not splitting the fleet 6 and 6 in Cadiz? Whether that will happen, but Russell's very good at throwing mud at a wall and seeing what sticks, and he does listen to good ideas, and he does he is pretty reactionary as a dictator in our sport, and he will change and he will do things if he thinks it's going to work, and I why not trial it before the end of this season?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I guess it's hard with the TV window, it might affect all of that and just change it might be too big a step to take. Maybe better to just wait till next season. Yeah. So as you say, we've got Geneva coming up next. It's a lake event. Foiling on lakes, foiling on fresh water is completely different to foiling in salt water. We've seen that before with the racing in Chicago. Do you think that's going to change things? Let's presume they do get enough wind to go foiling.
Yeah. I think they will. I think there'll be a number of teams eyeing if it's lighter winds, will be eyeing, just a little more settled, tactical, technique-led event. It's been quite windy for quite a few of these events, and a more tactical one where you're on the foils, off the foils, the light weather foils will help. But the people like Italy, Canada, the Brits will be eyeing, a big win in Geneva. Equally, America. I mean, there's some green shoots there. I know they're the much maligned team, and whether they have the talent on board, but it looks like
by us,
by us,
much maligned by us.
Yeah, sorry, by me in particular. There's others as well, but 8th, 12th, 9th, and 7th this weekend. Okay. But the encouraging thing was that they were in the hunt in stuff. So, and the one event where they won a race or won the event or whatever was in the light. So maybe they'll start looking at it. Switzerland, obviously, they had a shocker. 11, 11, 8th, and 9th. Didn't look at the races. They were lapped in one of them. There's got to be some serious thoughts there as to whether Seb Schneider is good enough, whether Arno steps onto the helm. You've got Brian Matreau, who I really rated through the America's Cup last time, just not at the races at the moment. So they've got to be eyeing a big Geneva. And Germany, maybe it wasn't a fix and a flash in the pan in Sassnitz. They are. It's really nice to see they are emerging from the pack as the sort of leader of the pack. We know who the top guys are, and Germany seem to be making all the right moves.
Yeah. There's a few false dawns in this fleet, though, wasn't there? Because we saw the Swiss string a few races and a few events together, and we were commenting on, maybe the Swiss are going to be like a mid-fleet team this year and not a back of the fleet, and then they faded away. But yeah, Germany, I mean, they won the start a couple of times, led around the first mark and the first gate, nearly won the last race if the Brits hadn't have snatched it at the end with a bit of inspired wind shift strategy from Hannah.
Yeah, I mean,
and Brazil, I thought looked look better this time. They lost a race to gear failure, but I saw them up there quite a lot.
Yep, they led round the top mark. Goody was making some good calls. 7-7, a hydro failure took them out in the fourth race, and then a third. Not bad, okay? You know, there's green shoots. Equally, you know, the one that we all were raving about at the beginning of the season, Canada.
Mm.
You know, they've looked very off. Giles is like, and there was a curious interview he did. And he said, yeah, we're a bit of a skeletal team this year, this event. And we had to get Bledon Mon out of the coaching booth into a wetsuit and onto the boat. And I just looked at it and just, skeletal team?
What does that mean?
What does that mean? What's going on behind the scenes there? Giles, I don't know. I mean, you know Giles better than I do, but he just doesn't quite seem as into it as he was. But, you know, he did have that second place, should have had the bullet when the Kiwis, you know, again, essentially lucked out on that, this is race two on that upwind leg, should have had the race win. Just doesn't quite feel that Giles is there at the moment. And I don't know what's going on mentally or behind the scenes or whatever. It just hasn't had a good middle parts of this season.
Yeah, it's a strange one because, you know, they started off so strongly when he jumped on the helm with them, and, you know, Billy Goodrem was flying the boat like a wizard. Mm. And they couldn't slow the thing down. But, you know, since then it's been really, really patchy. I heard Giles kind of chipping away at their strategists on when they led around the first mark, and then he couldn't jive when he wanted to because I don't think he was made aware of a boat behind. I'm not sure what it was, but it all sounded a bit fraught, you know.
Mm.
And you know, communication and the mood on these boats has to be really clicking. Everything needs to be clicking. I think that's a struggle for them.
I think we come back to the Dylan and Hannah relationship, the way they're operating together. It's really impressive. I think Hannah is a very intelligent individual in that she knows how to make Dylan tick. And, you know, is that the same on other boats? And Canada's probably a prime example of a pretty dominant physical character in Giles. And double gold medalist, he's got all the chutzpah around him, but does it click with the team? Like you say, but they couldn't slow the boat down earlier in the season. They were just on fire. Maybe that win when the Brits beat him when he was miles ahead in the final in Sydney, maybe that did actually take a bit of a mental toll out of him. But then again, when he was up in the hunt, that superb start on the windward side led away around the first mark. But I don't know, the Kiwis were chasing him down and it didn't happen, and I thought they were going to win. And if that wind shift hadn't come in, it should. You know, that's one of those things. Unfortunately, he should have had a race win this weekend, and he looked great when he was up there, and the team, you know, are up. But then follows that up with what was it, an 11th and a 10th? It's like, phew, you know, got gassed out at the tried the same trick again in was it race number three. Got gassed out at the starboard end, and it just wasn't happening for Giles. And he's cutting a dejected figure off the water, and that translates all the way through the team. As you look at Dylan, obviously he's won. You know, he's signing the camera. He looks happy. All the boys are there. You know, there's Ben Ainslie and Georgie Ainslie, and everybody seems together. And a big shout out also to Robbie Wilson. I thought his calls, when we were privileged enough to hear them from the coaching booth, were spot on. You know, you've got to take the right gate. It's not one and done on the other. You know, and that relationship there, that's also key. And obviously you take Bledon Mon in Canada, put him on the boat. Who's now doing the coaching role? Who's got the skill that Bledon's got? It's all round difficult. And I think it's probably the strength in depth of these teams now that is going to, you look at the Kiwis, they've got Sam Meach sitting there, you know, he's silver medalist in the Olympics. Was it bronze, silver? Great guy and doing the business for them. Same with the Aussies, but Tom was all over the shop. And the outstanding team in consistency-wise was the Spanish, who had a 3-3-2 and then obviously bailed out in the last race. And you know, who's going to be there in the final? I think it's Australia, New Zealand and the Brits. I can't see anybody else getting there.
Yeah. Just to go back to that call from Robbie Wilson, I love it when we hear the coaches make calls. And it was a nice combo with Stevie Morrison in the commentary booth who went on to explain, you know, why it was so important to go right, because it was less manoeuvres in these shifty conditions. And I thought that was great. Good for our sport when people can understand it at that level. And let's see more of that if we can. All right. Well, we're getting up to towards half an hour. That's probably okay for a one-day event. It is going to be Geneva next weekend, so we'll be back at this pretty soon. Not sure I'm going to make it to Geneva, but I am going to try and get to Cadiz, because I think Cadiz could be a windy one, and yeah, that'll be a bit of fun. So, Magnus, thanks a million for joining me this week. As ever, thanks to everybody for listening around the world and for all the kind comments that I get about the podcast, and even some of the nasty ones too. And we will see you in about a week's time.
Cheers, Justin.